Hi, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of A Gem of a Secret podcast. Today, I am deciding to actually go out of my norm, and I wore what was I wearing today? It was a dress. Wasn't it a dress? No, it wasn't a dress. No, it was a dress. It might have been a dress. It was actually an outfit made by No Offense, and it was like a country girl outfit, and I did a bingo today, and I'm really excited to have done a little bit more of my art form during Pride Month, because in Portland now we have 2 months of Pride. So instead of gabbing on about me, I actually have a beautiful interview planned for all of you today. So before I get into it, I needed to ask listeners, how are you doing today?
How many of you are fans of RuPaul's Drag Race? Well, I have an event for you. On July 20th, after Portland's Pride weekend, we have an event called Hangover, where it's going to be a drag show featuring Cornbread, the snack, Jete from RuPaul's Drag Race Season 14. Get your tickets now. We already sold out of our early bird and our mid bird tickets already. So get your tickets now, pre-sale, because they do go up at the door. It's at Triple Nickel Pub on July 20th at 9 o'clock p.m. We hope to see you there, all you Drag Race fans and drag fans. Visit www.thecdsdrag.com/nickel. That address again is www.thecdsdrag.com/nickel.
It's a podcast. Check it out. Tune into what they tell you podcast. Check
it out. And we're back, and I have the great pleasure of introducing my drag child, Aziza Holiday. Hey, Aziza, how are you?
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm doing fantastic. How are you, mother?
I am doing good. I am really happy here on this Thursday. Let's pretend like I'm not recording this on the day that it's supposed to be coming out, because I'm super professional. I'm doing really good today. How was your Pride Month? Let's start with there.
Oh, yeah. We get to do a double Pride Month in Portland, though.
It's tiring.
So it's still Pride Month. But the real Pride Month was good.
Oh, gosh. It was so I'm so tired. I really am. I literally woke up and I did my calendar and I was like, oh, wow. Oh, wow. There's a lot of gigs going on this month. Yeah.
Yeah, I was a little lazier this Pride Month. I did fewer gigs, but higher dollar amounts. And then spent most of my time chronically online arguing with bigots.
Yeah, I know. I want to argue online so bad. I want to argue online so bad. Like, I just, every time I see the term like cis is a slur, cisgender is a slur, I want to fight on the internet so bad. I want to
stop myself. I can't stop myself from doing it.
But the thing is, like, I haven't gotten into a Facebook war in like a really long time. And, like, I just really want, like, a good one.
Yeah, my Facebook and my Twitter are two very different environments. Because my Facebook, I'm very careful about who I respond to, and I don't tolerate any nonsense. So those conversations are usually heartfelt and meaningful, or, you know, about my booty hole. Yeah. Whereas my post on Twitter, I'm much more likely to cut a bitch and then talk about my booty hole.
I have noticed when you share stuff from your Twitter that I'm like, I was like, you and Carlos, actually, like, both of you, like, the stuff you share from your Twitter, I was like, I'm on the wrong platform, because I see your see both of your other stuff on Facebook. And so I'm like, I was like, dang, I need to go over there, because they are cutting up over there. They are giving no fucks over there.
Yeah, Twitter is the culture war.
I mean, until we had Threads, which, you know, we're all really excited about, apparently.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, well, actually, this is a topical piece, so I'll just go ahead and add it in. But, like, you know, Threads just released over the last 48 hours. You know, it's Facebook's Twitter, you know, to basically give an FU to Elon Musk. And so people are on it right now, and the algorithm doesn't work yet. So, like, you see everything. Everybody sees each other's posts. It's not showing you things that you want to see. It's showing you just everything of people that you follow or people that are, like, kind of in your network. And it's funny because, like, people are just, like, going ham. Like, even celebrities are going ham because they know everybody's just going to see everything that they say, which is stupid. Until, because, like, Mark Zuckerberg said that 7 million people joined. in the first like several hours, right? And like it was just blowing up, and they were really surprised because they didn't think it would take off. Because, you know, there's been so many other social media platforms that have kind of launched that are not doing super well. And so I think they thought that about this too, because it is exactly Twitter. I mean, it is just Twitter in a different place. And they don't censor it yet. They don't have the censoring turned on. So you
neither
have all
does
these,
Twitter.
Like, I know. Twitter is like, no, I'm not going to do that either. So like they did. They like, because I think they were going to censor it. And then so like my feed is, I'm just scrolling at work. I'm like, oh, that's a penis. That's a penis. That's a penis. And people are saying, they're like, I want to see if I can put my penis on here.
I think that has to do with who you follow, though.
Oh, thank you for calling me out.
I mean, I'm not mad. I'm not hating at all.
Oh, that's good. Oh my gosh, I just went on a tangent. But no, you cut up on Twitter. I super love the stuff that you post. I also think that I kind of want to talk about this a little bit. Like, so you don't ever have to do this, but I've noticed that sometimes you give advice out into the world and whatever about people dealing with things and stuff like that. Where does that come from? And do you feel like you have a passion for that, or is it just something that you do naturally?
I definitely do have a passion for it. My background, I grew up with like severe isolation. And I just always had wished that there would have been someone there who understood my situation or was more experienced with my situation that could guide me and help me through those tough spots. And, you know, we didn't have that in the 90s.
No.
So now that we have social media and everyone can be connected and find, you know, their own, even if they're millions of miles away, I figure it's a good use of that technology.
Yeah, I super agree. I often say that there are people with my labels and my identity that are not on screen, even from as simple as being like Black people in certain roles to queer people in certain roles to trans asterisk people in certain roles. And like, it's just it, like, or in relationships, positive, healthy relationships.
And that it's that part.
Yeah.
I have yet to see any like mainstream media where you have two gay Black men or two Black trans women doing something healthy and constructive.
Yeah.
It's always just trauma, trauma, trauma.
Oh, it's just consistent trauma. I literally am watching 911 right now, and there is a Black lesbian couple, which is, it's blowing my mind. And like, they haven't dealt with like a lot of like trauma. Cause I am one of those people, cause I know it's probably going to come, but I'm a big advocate for removing the narrative, and it's the kill the gays trope for lesbians, specifically women. It's not even gay men. It's specifically women. Wherever you see a happy lesbian couple, one of them will die. Like one, yes, just like
exactly.
they're like
somehow.
And it's always funny because you'll see on the news, like they're like, after they get canceled, after the writers get canceled, you'll always see the writers of the show or the producers of the show being like, we didn't even know that was a thing. Like, we just thought it was like a really great storyline. It was really impactful. We just didn't know that. We're like, obviously it's not really super impactful because all of you are doing it. You just want to kill lesbians. Like,
exactly.
Gosh. I was like, so no. And I agree with that sentiment too about the, I would like to see an insanely healthy Black queer, and I do mean male, because like it seems like they're gonna like it's palatable for women, right? It's palatable to see lesbians. I'd like to see queer men, Black queer men,
because straight men can fetishize lesbians,
right? And then that, which is a huge issue in itself, and they're so in problematic terms like exotic and bullcrap like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I would really love to see that, because the thing is, as children, and you know this as well as I do, as children, when we're looking at these things, we kind of adopt them as the narratives of our lives. And like, so when you didn't see anybody who actually represented you, you adopted a very white narrative about your life.
Exactly.
And it just, and a very straight narrative about your life. And then you grow up with these ideas and values, and then it feels like you spend like a good 20 years of your life unlearning all the crap that you learned as a kid just because of media.
It's so true. Yes. And, you know, I'm always trying to explain that to people when they're like, oh, there's too much gay stuff in the media. And I'm like, you mean any gay stuff at all? you got a whiff of something that felt a little gay to you, and now you all are panicked.
You got a whiff of something that felt a little gay. Oh gosh! And then now, but the thing is, like, now there was this storyline in the same show I was watching that I was like, this would be really great for a gay male character to like have this moment. Like, because they had two straight males that were bonding so aggressively that I was like, this feels very romantic to me. They should lead into this storyline. I think that fans would really love it. And then they pulled back immediately. Like, I mean, they pulled back so aggressively that they're almost, like, not even friends in the stories anymore. It's just like they, like, sensed it was happening. And they're like, oh, they can't be – we can't have two healthy males just being good friends either. Like, that's just not a thing.
Yeah, even that's crossing a line.
Toxic masculinity bullcrap. So, switching gears just a little bit on you. Do you do any writing? Like, do you ever write? Like, cause I know that, Aziza is a comic as well. Do you ever write for other people? I've always wanted to ask you that.
No. Well, kind of. Because, my partner has started also dipping their toes into comedy. Mm-hmm. So we do help each other write sometimes, just because, you know, we spend all of our time together because we're healthy. Right. And so, you know, a typical lesbian love affair. We have secluded ourselves away from civilization.
Mm-hmm. As you do.
Yeah.
No, as you do. And that makes sense. I have, my old roommate, was really, really into comedy and was like researching it and like read a bunch of books and was like doing amateur nights. And he has like a wealth of knowledge and he watches a lot of comedy specials as well. You know, does that whole thing that you would imagine somebody who was like really, really into it would do when they're starting out. And so he would help me write my jokes or like we would workshop things together. And I really appreciated that, having that in my home. Cause now
exactly.
Like, when I workshop jokes and whatever to non-comics and whatever, they're like, well, I don't know if that's gonna land. And I'm like, well, we're workshopping. And I was like, so I'm not performing it, I'm just kind of speaking it out loud into the universe to see if I enjoy it. And they're like, but it's not funny right now. I'm like, okay.
You're like, I know that
I'm just saying words. At this point there's no presentation.
You, like, God. Draw someone a sketch of a car you want to make, and they're like, I don't see how that's going to get us anywhere. I can't even get into that. The doors don't open.
Where's the doorknob? You're like, oh, my, wow. Yeah, I've been actually wanting to go back to doing more open mics so I can workshop some stuff with other people in the craft so they can be like, ooh, that was terrible, or ooh, that was great, so I can grow in that profession because I'm very new to that. One of the things is I want to let the listeners know, one of the reasons that Aziza is my drag daughter is there's a beautiful partnership between the fact that I've been doing drag for so long and then Aziza's been doing comedy for so long that we can trade ideas and workshop with each other, and it's been really beautiful. I remember I made a comment. One of the first shows we ever did together, probably like the second, I had said something like I tried to quit drag or whatever, and the way that Aziza started her set was, she's like, I almost thought about quitting comedy before I walked up to the stage.
And I meant that from my heart.
Oh, and I was just like, I was like, I love this person. This is so great. So let's get into your creativity. Let's get into your processes. So when it comes to your drag is really artistic and you've gone with a lot of like native roots, which I've appreciated. And so how do you do your song selection? How do you think about your makeup, your performance style? Let's get into that whole process.
Yeah, so the character of Aziza Holiday, it's very much rooted in, like, West African spirituality, themes of, you know, healing ancestral curses. Mm-hmm. And there is actually our traditions, indigenous traditions throughout Africa, of people essentially doing what we would call drag. Mm-hmm. For ceremonial purposes. So that's really what I'm trying to tap into, mm-hmm. that sort of energy. So I try to base my makeup choices off of traditional West African makeup styles, same with my hair choices. The wardrobe, I try to incorporate as much of that imagery as I can as well. But, you know, there's sometimes practicality in just plain glam. So have to apply some creative license where that goes.
Yeah, definitely. And I really enjoyed what you've done with it, because I think that there's always like a mission to one of the things I always say to people is like, nobody does drag because they have their stuff together. Like, people are always like working through something in their drag. And it could be something they're working through, something positively, like working through your ancestry or working through your gender identity or working to find your voice or, you know, stuff like that. You know, we're all working through something, or some people do it to heal from trauma. A lot of the blackness I do in my performances is healing from, like, I lived in a place that, you know, like, made me feel silenced a lot in my blackness. And when I speak up, it would get like hushed. And I would, so my drag, when I do those like Black Girl Magic pieces, or when I do those Black Excellence pieces, it's because I'm trying to like find my, I'm trying to find a like scream outside of the shell that the, I feel society has put me in. And so like, so that's why I really have appreciated all the stuff that you've done with it, because I can really tap into that. Like, I feel like the ancestors are cheering when you perform, which I love that. And it's, yeah, it's a good vibe.
And that definitely is like the motivation behind me creating this persona. Because, you know, growing, because you grew up in the Midwest essentially as well.
Yes.
Yeah. So growing up in the middle of the country, you know, your blackness is always squashed and criticized and critiqued and held under a microscope. And, you know, we reclaim that part of our identity. And then on this other side, we're also reclaiming our queer identity that was, you know, not permitted, at least certainly not for me growing up. And then the transness on top of all of that. But then this, like, often overblown cultural conflict between queerness and blackness, as though the two aren't entirely compatible. So I definitely wanted to create a space in which the wholeness of our being is really pulled together.
Yeah, I can hear that. I see that. That's actually really beautiful. I love that. I know that. What do you find to be the most challenging part of drag since you've started?
Memorizing lyrics.
Yeah.
That shit is hard.
Yeah, it is. It's rough. It's rough. I'm doing a song tomorrow. I think I know two words.
Right now. I don't know how y'all do it.
Most of them don't, actually. That's the secret. That's the secret. They do their little watermelon cantaloupes with their words, and, you know, and they eat them words, and I do find it to be challenging. So for me, if I don't know the words, I don't know the theme of the song.
Yeah.
Like, that's the problem for me. Like, so if I don't know most of those words, I actually feel too uncomfortable performing it. Because what will happen is, and this will happen to you every single time, if you don't know a song well, that's when the music isn't loud enough for you to even fake it. Like, that's what will always happen. The music will be so quiet, and they're like, she does not know this song, because she's... Like, this would have been a cute part to do a move or something. And they're like, this girl does not know this song at all. So,
agreed. And it's that part right there where, like, you want to know the different cues. And so you can get the movements with the words. And then that's me moving and talking simultaneously. So now I'm tripped up there.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a lot to keep together.
It's a lot to keep together. And like, and so my thing is, my advice for all the listeners out there who want to maybe consider doing drag is, what I do is, for me, because I like to sing, I will oftentimes, and this is painstaking actually, what I'll do is I'll find a karaoke track for the song. And then I will play the song, and I will, even if it's off key, I'll start singing the song. And every time I get a word wrong, I start it from the beginning. It is awful. It is, you hate that song by the time you actually get through it all the way once. And then I do, and then I say, can't stop doing it until I get all the way through the song three times without messing up. So if even I'm like at the end and like mess up the last word, I'll start it again. And that doesn't count towards my three. I have to do three, not consecutively. I have to do it three times in a row Or sorry, three times and get it right.
That's discipline. I respect that.
I'll do it in the car, which makes it a lot easier. So you're like, because you can't really do much else in the car these days, except for maybe talk on the phone. So I'll do it in the car and just keep replaying. And that's how I do it.
Yeah. Secretly, I do the same thing with my stand-up, which is probably why I can't hold down a normal job anymore, because I just spend all day talking to myself. If you're in an office and all of a sudden you're like, so then I cut a bitch.
And then it came in my booty hole, and they're like, ma'am, this is literally a Wendy's. Oh gosh. I always wanted to ask you this question too. And I think that this is probably true for most comics and whatever, but I'd love to hear your take. Do you ever get so annoyed with a joke because you've repeated it so much?
I hate my jokes so much. It's part of why I perform the way I do, where I just like have a hodgepodge of jokes that I can pull from. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of bigger name comics, they'll have one very like tightly knit 60-minute set. I refuse. I already hate the individual jokes. I don't want to hate my entire time on stage.
Right. She's like 45 minutes in. She's like, I might unalive myself before the end of this.
Exactly.
That's fantastic. I was actually, I had seen a comic from out of town recently. I was in this smaller show, and she did an aggressive amount of like crowd work, but I also felt like in my soul a little bit that the crowd work was because she just also didn't want to do the set.
Yeah,
it was a lot of. I mean, it was like maybe like a minute or two of jokes, and then it was like 15 minutes of crowd work. And all of her stuff for the crowd work was funny. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. It was really, really funny. It just was like, I was like, dang. I was like, she is harping on this audience.
I got to see Dave Attell at our local comedy club here in Portland when he came through. And yeah, a lot of crowd work. It was the last night, too. Mm-hmm. So you knew he was done. And it was obvious. He came out on stage, didn't look like he had gotten ready for the gig at all. started telling like two jokes. I mean, like told part of a joke, threw it out, started on a different joke, and then just started doing crowd work. Brought his feature and the host back on stage to just have a conversation. I'm like, okay, it's not just me. I'm not kidding.
Dang, that is so funny. That's really good. There was that comic, and oh my gosh, I'm so bad about that. I'm so bad about everyone's name. If you, like, people are like, oh, she should learn the people's names in the field. I was like, if you ask me about drag queens, because, like, you could ask me, so there's this drag competition called Baby Queen right now that's happening over at Candy, and not to be rude or anything, but if anybody asked me any of their names, I would be like, I knew maybe one or two. Like,
yeah, that's fair.
It's just because I'm really bad with the names. And I did a show, the Curious Comedy Theater, and with somebody who was visiting. And then he just kept popping up at every drag event that I was doing because he's queer. And so he was just, like, constantly there. And, like, he would always just pop in, and I would just call him out on the microphone. And he was like, Coco. He's like, am I the only person you know at these shows? And I was like, no, it's just really interesting that I just keep seeing you specifically visiting from out of town at these shows that I'm at. I was like, there's other drag shows to go to. And he's like, yeah, but you're nice.
So, aww,
yeah, it worked so out. Sweet. It was cool. He was fun.
And also, he's the only person you knew at any of those shows.
Absolutely. Names are hard. Names are really hard. I've also noticed that there's like this, there's this thing that all of you do that, like, you all have like these prepared intros for the MC to come back on. Like, it's almost just like they just flow out of y'all's mouths. They're like, and let's give it up for da 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 because da 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 and da 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 da. And then, like, I was like, is that just like, what's happening here? I was like, as I don't have my natural flow yet for bringing the MC back out. I'm just like, I'm done. And like, you know, scurry away like a scared cat.
So, yeah, the secret is the key to a good stand-up set is to make sure that you have a strong joke at the beginning, unless you're like me and you like to dig yourself a ditch first and then see if you can get yourself back out. And then you always want to know how you're going to end. You want to always end on a strong laugh.
Oh, that's funny. I just, she's like, unless you're like me and want to dig a hole that you have to claw your way out of. Oh, gosh.
But you're, it's more exciting.
It's you're like, it's like a video game. Sometimes you make it up there. Sometimes you don't. Whatever. We'll yeah. figure it out by the end. No, I've watched you. I saw it was like a TikTok of you or something like that, a video of you at Helium from a few years ago and whatever. And I was like, gosh, like, dang. I was like, she is, you control a crowd pretty well. And I've always really admired how you'll bring the audience along with you as you're walking back and forth on stage, which I find to be like mesmerizing. Cause sometimes when a comic walks back and forth, cause as an avid audience member, like I know sometimes they don't follow them, but people follow you because you are just irreverent in a lot of the stuff that you say. You just go for it. You're like, we're talking about this right now. We're talking about penis. that's where we're at.
And you make the audience think that they were already thinking it. That's the secret. I'm like, we were all thinking it.
You're like, wait, why are you pretending? Yeah. So have you, I wanted to know this. This would be great for the listeners as well. So you've done stand up at a few drag shows, like actually more than a few. People tend to book you quite often for like intermissions for drag shows or openings and stuff like that. How have you found that to be? Because like it's like changing the narrative of like what's happening to a different art form and then changing it back to a different art form. So have you dealt with that? How have you felt about that?
Yeah, for the most part, I think it can be very effective. I think it's fun. I recently got hired to do a set in the middle of a pole dance show.
Oh.
That was horrible. That was awkward. That, like, I knew I was set up for failure. The first person who twerked their way down a pole, I'm like, I can't follow that. I've got nothing.
You like take off your socks. You're like, am I doing it? Like, yeah. Like, and then telling a joke afterwards. Yeah.
I think with drag, there's enough overlap between drag and comedy. Because, you know, drag audiences tend to have very lively senses of humor. Oh. As long as things stay queer, they are getting what they came for. Right. So it's just a nice little a breath, if you will.
Right. I love that. I think so, because on that same note, like, I tell people, like, especially where I started in a city with mostly, it was a huge music city, like, they always just related drag to bands, which for the most part, there's a lot of crossover in how it's promoted and set up and da 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 da. But a lot of people tend to book drag queens at, like, punk rock bars to, like, you know, host on bands. But the funny thing about it is bands usually like to host themselves. Mm-hmm. They like to get the audience in that mood and that groove with them. And so a lot of the times what I do is, I say I will host off a band while we're switching between bands, but never on. So, like, I will talk to the audience, like, after, like, you know, the main, like, guitarist or whatever. And the last time I did this was funny. Like, I went up and grabbed the mic. The guys were like, that's my special mic. And I said, okay, Stephanie, listen. I'll just grab the... I was like, you're doing too much. This is my special mic. And I got up there and I just talked to the kids for, like... Because it took, like, this breakdown, because it was a huge band, took so long by the time the next band was set up and whatever. And so I was talking to the audience for, like, 17 minutes. Like, and, like, it's, which kind of unheard of. Because usually it's, like, you go up there, like, next band, and then go continue drinking at the bar. Like, so, yeah, I get it. That's actually interesting. So my other question is, where do you like to actually go in a drag show? Do you like to go in the middle or the beginning or the end?
Oh, my God. I think right now I definitely prefer the middle.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I am still fairly new to... Or do you mean when I'm doing comedy?
I meant both, actually.
Okay. Let's see. I guess for both. the middle is still the best. Yeah. But that's mostly because I'm a whore. But
yeah.
in all seriousness, though, the beginning, I like to see the other performers first so that I get a feel for the room and what the energy for the night is. Mm-hmm. And then I can do my thing. But if I screw up, there's still more show after me to satisfy everyone.
You know, that's interesting, too, because I've been doing this business for a really long time. I always think that when somebody puts me first, the first spot's always really weird because as a producer, I'll say it from a producer's perspective, so it's less offensive to the people who've booked me. Cause I know they might not have ulterior motives, but like when I'm booking my shows, who I put first really varies on crowd size, audience, and whatever. And my casts are usually done before the show starts, sure. But like if I'm like, this venue's really small, I was like, and I think that most of the people will be people we know in the audience. It doesn't matter who goes first. If I'm like, this is a really large venue, this is a huge event, the person I need to go first needs to set up the show for success.
Exactly.
Right. And then I have had shows where I was like, I put this person first so we could, because they perform so poorly, I need to get them out of the way. I've done like all of it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I really kind of recognize that. I used to love going in the middle. That's where I felt most comfortable because I could pick and choose like things that would work from other performers. Basically what you're saying, like from the audience, like, okay, so that side of the room isn't tipping. This side cheers a little bit more. That girl has some 20s.
Exactly.
Yeah. I totally get that. And now it's funny. Like now I just, I don't care as much.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't care as much. Put me wherever. Like, just let me know when I can go home.
Yeah, yeah. Which is, that's much more how I am with comedy than I am with drag. Because comedy, I'm going to do what I'm going to do regardless. And I think everyone knows that by now.
Yeah, because you are the person who you get your light. You always do your light. You say, light me when my time is over, is what you've always like kind of said. Yeah, you're like, light me when it's over.
Yeah.
Then I'll figure it out.
Because I'm just trying to see if I complete my contract. That's what the light means to me. Everyone else is like, that's the end of my set. No, that's just guarantees that you pay me what we agree to.
The light is you agreeing to pay me. So this is what's funny too. I have noticed this, like, I told this to you, but I think it's going to be funny for the listeners. I think that drag shows, what's funny about stand-up comedy shows, y'all get out of there on time. I have never been to a comedy show where that venue wasn't almost empty 15 minutes after that show is done. Yep. Like, they are out and they start,
which is amazing because don't lie to people. Don't lie to people. Don't lie to these people. Do not lie to these people.
Okay, they never really start on time.
You just think we start on time because one, you're a drag queen, and two, you spend enough time around performers that you're like, this started within the day they said. But comedy shows notoriously start 30 to 60 minutes late.
Dang.
Always.
Oh, wow.
I've never been to a comedy show that actually started on time.
Oh, my
but
God.
But we do always get out on time.
Yeah, it clears out. It's so funny, except for obviously open calls, but like or open mics, it clears every show I've done. I'm like, dang, y'all don't even get a cocktail. Like, it's like picture, 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 and then somebody has their purse and their kids, and like they've picked up their dry cleaning on the way. They're like, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go. I was like, what?
I think queens are more social than stand-ups.
Well, I think it's because, this is such an interesting conversation to have with you too, is because you all are in the same business of it's still entertainment. you need your followers, right? You need people yeah. to follow you, like your stuff. Like, it sucks that we have to do it. It's part of the business. People have to like you to keep getting booked, right? So
exactly.
drag artists have always felt like they had to stay after the gig and kiki with the audience to make a connection with their fans. My thing is, I have always been this way with drag and even with comedy. My thing is, I get there, it's funny, I'm late to every gig, don't get me wrong, but I always plan a 15-minute buffer before whatever I'm supposed to perform for the first time to go out in that audience, even with comedy shows, and just talk to people a little bit, let yeah. them know my name. I do it before the show because after the show, I'm usually blackout wasted and like, I forget to tell people to look at my Instagram. I'm like, here's a nude, but forget my Instagram.
yeah.
So I think that's kind of interesting because how do you get your followers, or what do you do to engage your audiences?
I'm adorable and I post a lot of pictures of my booty hole. I mean,
I'm adorable.
I mean, let's be real.
You are adorable. Your pictures are just the most adorable pictures. You always like, this picture's so cute. And it really is the cutest picture ever. I'm like, she was just doing that today? Okay.
Exactly. It's
fine. I was like, where'd she find the time? I look like a troll.
I got to give the people what they come for.
They do. And also, I have to give this shout out to Aziza as well. I've said this online many times, but a lot of you out there won't recognize, might not know this about her, is she comes to stand-up comedy shows in the cutest outfits I have ever seen. And it's always like, it's so chic. It's incredibly fashionable. The hair is always right. The makeup's beautiful. And it's just like, and she's always just sitting there just looking like Eleganza in the corner. And like, I show up in my ugly dress and stuff like that that fit that day. And she's like, oh, hi, how are you? I'm like, who the fuck are you? And of course, then she opens her mouth and she's like, oh, y'all niggas was late to this show. And I'm like, okay, there she is.
It's true. It's true. Yeah.
It's so cute. It's such a great job. So talk about, I want the listeners to understand some of your achievements. So what have been some of your bigger achievements for your stand-up comedy career?
Oh my God. Honestly, this year has been huge for me. I've been traveling a lot more because I'm spoiled and, you know, my partner has a real job, so I can do that now. And so I've been traveling more. I did a Pride show up in Seattle with T.S. Madison.
Oh, wow.
In June. Yeah.
Wow. Congratulations. How was that? Let's stop there real quick. How was that?
Okay. Hopefully she's not listening to this podcast.
I'm sending it to her directly, but yeah, go ahead.
All right. Good, good, good. Actually, go ahead. So... I love her. She is just a ball of energy and radiance, you know. And I've noticed that, you know, especially Black trans women who are bold enough to come out young just own their shit. They own their space and they just try to build everyone up as they go. And also, that girl would not stop talking. That show... We were just talking about how comedy shows always end on time and then we get out. That show went 2 hours late. And she called herself hosting. There are floating quotations there for the listeners at home. She was hosting. And by that, she meant she did an hour between each act. And I'm like, girl.
Oof.
Carol, I love you, and also, I was trying to be home by now.
I'm trying to be home by now.
I got drugs and blowjobs back at the hotel, and you got me in this theater at 2 in the morning.
But, yeah. She's like, okay. The only trade I'm getting at 2 a.m., they're going to be toothless, and they're going to smell a little funny. Yeah.
And I mean, I'm going to make that sacrifice because I'm all the way in Seattle, but God.
Oh, God. Oh, my gosh. That's funny. Oh, that was good.
Shout out to my girl, T.S. We love you.
Yes, I'm going to send this to her directly. So what are some of your other achievements? Let's let the kids know.
Oh, I don't know. Why are you putting me on the spot?
I don't know. It's your career and stuff. The Dave Chappelle thing was great.
Yeah, that got big. I'm trying.
Yeah, that was something.
He'll keep writing me about that. He'll keep talking to me about that. And I'm like, yeah, it was a thing. I did. And I was a substitute writer for that piece, too.
Really?
Yeah, I wasn't their top pick. I was not their top pick to write that response.
Oh, wow.
It was trickle down. It was trickle down comedy, but that's all right.
Yeah, so just for the kids out there, Dahlia apparently didn't write or was the third writer in a
exactly.
piece against Dave Chappelle, who like said some really transphobic things, and then
not against about.
That's true. It wasn't it was about.
Yeah,
I remember it. It was more about.
I am shade and beef free. I just tell people about themselves.
Yeah, then I think that's fair. And then you got brought on to what did you?
Tears Morgan.
Yeah.
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 Honestly, that is the highlight. I added that to my bio. That is in my professional bio now. That I had a midweek conversation with Piers Morgan and John Waters.
Yeah, a midweek conversation. And it was funny because the way that I saw Dahlia do this was really interesting because I think it was really tactical on Dahlia's part because I think that you did that thing where they were trying to get you riled to make ratings and you were refusing to let them treat you like a dancing monkey. And I really valued that. And you kept saying everything you said was on point. It was very short. Basically, one of the things that you did say that I thought was interesting that could have been considered controversial, but we all kind of know it as people, is like, you basically said anything does have the potential to be funny.
Yeah.
And like, which I really appreciated that because I bet they were all expecting you to be like, no, there's just certain things you can't joke about. And you're like, everything has the potential for comedy.
Yeah.
And I was just like,
you just got to be good at it.
Yeah, you got to be good at it. You got to be good at it. And I was just like, I was like, Dahlia's not letting them get any sound bites. Not no. a damn one. No uppity. You look so beautiful. So even if somebody tried to like take a screenshot and make that crazy, like that angry lesbian, like
yeah, meme exactly.
we've all seen, Dahlia was just looking there beautiful, like an angel, just like, you know, anything has the potential to be funny. Let me look to the right. Is this my light
so
over here?
So honored to be here with you.
I'm so honored to be here. I was like, she is playing y'all like fools. I was like,
it was the most fun. It was the most fun I've ever had trolling conservatives. It was great.
I appreciate you sharing all of that with us. So what are your goals for drag? Like if you keep blowing up in the way that you've done with comedy, what are your goals for drag? Like what do you see yourself doing? Is it like, I want to be on Drag Race, or it's like, one of mine was I wanted to perform on a cruise ship and stuff like that? Or what do you see? What do you envision for your drag?
I think for me, I just want to like make ceremonial drag a thing. That's what I like to see more than anything, like a community. Because I mean, there's so much pro-blackness and the sort of returning to ancestral roots and roots work mm-hmm. going on, especially among the queers of the black community.
Yeah.
So I see no reason why that can't become, you know, like a major fixture of what drag can be.
Yeah, that's fair. Actually, that's really, really fair. And as you say that, that's really interesting because this is a really problematic thing to say, but it's my story, so it's fair. I don't think I really discovered my blackness until I understood my queerness.
Mm-hmm.
There was more resources to be a queer person in a very, very white conservative community.
Absolutely.
Than there was black resources in a community that had literally out of thousands, over 60,000 white people or 69,000 people, I think is what it was when I lived there. There were 420 of them that were black.
Mm-hmm.
And so blackness was such a small portion of the population that It took me forever to understand what my blackness actually meant to me. But there were tons of, because white people can be queer. So there were tons of resources about accepting yourself as a queer person. Yeah. So I think it took me a long time to really value that. And so I appreciate that ceremonial drag aspect and as a market, because that there is a lot of queer people who are understanding that their drag should also represent their ancestry. Because one piece that I will consistently say, and this kills me all the time, is that, yes, I can wear a big white wig and a coiffed and styled big white wig,
yes,
and I
you
think that
can.
That's beautiful. I also think it's beautiful and amazing to wear dreads and locks and rows and twists and afros and like all of these other, and pussycat wigs, and wearing all these other black styles that are so beautiful to me and my family and my ancestors and stuff that we wore, stuff that my family still wears, and it's considered beautiful. And like, and people are always like, but that's not as big of drag. And I was like, I don't want to always have to wear a perfectly quite big white hair. I wear it because I can and I wanted to, but I also want to and I can wear these other things, and they're equally as beautiful. That's the point.
And it really calls back to like the origins of drag, really.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of it was freed slaves, so...
Yeah, and the dancing, the movements, the freedoms, the celebration, the liberation. And it really kind of kills me, too, that, like, when it comes to the world of drag, like, POC people are, like, rooted in a lot of its pivotal, monumental moments, but then will get shafted from, like, a local queer show or something like that, which I find always be really problematic. I'm like, you do realize without this group of people, you wouldn't have this thing that you're gatekeeping us from?
Exactly. Yeah. We're like, we are inviting you to the ceremony.
Yes, we're inviting you to the ceremony. What's wrong with you trying to keep me outside of my own damn house?
Exactly. Yeah.
No, I appreciate that. I really do love what you've been doing with your art. I think it's amazing. We still need to get together because Aziza had asked me if I could teach her how to dance more. And and we still need to get together and do that. But both of us are incredibly lazy and creatures of habit. So even though we love each other, it's like, hey, girl, you want to go to the bar and get a drink? And it's like, I could do that, but then I could also not do that.
Exactly. Yes. That part. Yes.
So when we see each other at a bar, we act stupid and we laugh all night long, and then we always after party, and I love those moments. But we probably should intentionally try.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just, you know,
we'll
just
see how
that
happens.
There.
We'll see how that goes.
We'll see how it happens. We'll see how it works out. So I have one final question for you. Yeah, one final question for you. So if you were to get into a bar fight and you needed other drag artists to help you win the fight, what drag artist, so at least two drag artists, who would you choose to help you win the bar fight and why?
Okay, without a doubt, if I were to go with some of my local faves, I want Kimber Shade on my side. Because she's small, so you know she's feisty. You know she's going to fight dirty, and I appreciate that, you know?
Yeah.
A bar fight is no time for rules. I also want Flawless in there, Flawless Shade. Yeah. I know can throw a punch. You know she can fight.
She can
You can
fight.
See it. You can see it in how she moves. You know, I want a four-person team, because speaking of people I know can fight, Shaniqua Volt.
Oh, yeah. She...
Shaniqua doesn't even have to fight. Shaniqua just has to show up at the bar. I'll wave to her, and everybody will just stand down.
Yeah, she's... Oh, yeah, you don't mess with her.
And then, just for a ringer, I want to throw in Atlas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she can throw
again,
down.
She crazy.
Yeah, she can throw down. She can throw down. And the funny thing about it is, most people, even if they don't know her, that's why I love this question so much. And I've told Shaniqua this a lot. A lot of people choose her. Like, a lot of people choose her. And she, and I don't actually think I've ever had her on the podcast. And she's like, why? She's like, everybody's chose me, but you've never included me on this journey of everyone saying who. And the funny thing is, I kind of wanted this post to give more traction back to the podcast where I, I write the name of the interview and the person people chose just as a Facebook post for, like, this is who they chose.
Yeah.
Because I think that would be really interesting. Of course, it'll spark drama. They're like, I don't even talk to that bitch no more. It's like, bro, it's not even about that. It's not that deep. So where can all the kids find you? What's your socials?
My socials, you'll not find any under Aziza yet, unfortunately, because I'm not established enough for my taste. I want to make sure that you adore me by the time you see me. So you can follow my other persona at Mix, that is MX, Dahlia Bell, all across the various mediums. So Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, but I don't post a lot on TikTok because they censor all my videos.
Oh, what? Isn't Bell spelled B-E-L-L-E?
Correct.
Or, okay, just making sure. Yep. Yeah. Do they? Yeah, that would make sense for the stuff that you say.
Yeah, exactly. You had to think about that for a moment. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was like,
yeah.
Wait a second. Why are they censoring you? And I was like, no, I know what you say. I've seen your Twitter.
Yeah. I know that's good for them. They should do that. They should censor your ass. But
so, the last thing I'm going to ask you is, since this is going to be coming out today, is there anything that you want to promote, like any events coming up, like this weekend or this upcoming week?
Absolutely.
Yes.
My two monthlies are back to back this month. So tonight is The Aftermath at Alberta Street Pub. And then this Saturday is our brunch show. I can say this on here. The Fucks of Life, also at Alberta Street Pub. And I can't hold it in. So starting in August, Thursdays, starting August 17th, Carlos and I, we have a new show starting up over at Siren Theater called The Rapture.
Ooh, good name.
Yes. And I will announce this part only on this podcast. So this is an exclusive.
Ooh.
You can let people know that you have exclusive inside information. So, The Fucks of Life, we wanted to really give more of an opportunity to young up-and-coming comics. The Aftermath, we definitely book based solely on talent. If it's funny, we will book you. The Rapture is exclusive. It is intentionally exclusive. It is being hosted by four Black queer femmes, myself, Carlos Kareem, Wyndham, DJ Wildchild of Dirty Angel Entertainment, and Mama Fee.
Oh,
and beautiful. Yeah, we are booking from our own intersections exclusively.
Oh, that's amazing. Oh, I'm going to have to check that out.
Unapologetically. We're not advertising it that way. It's just what's going to happen.
I love that. That is fantastic. Yeah. I can't wait to check it out. I really am going to go. I love hearing your stuff. I'm that person that, which I'm told is positive, a comedy show. I laugh way too loud in the back of the room.
That.
Oh my gosh. I'm so loud.
Yeah. You are what we want. That affirmation our parents never gave us.
Oh gosh. Yeah. I just want to be held. Oh gosh. Well, I appreciate you sharing all of your stories with us. I'm going to have all your socials on my website at gemofasecretpodcast.com. I'll also include some cute photos of you because I need to let everybody know how adorable my drag daughter is.
Thank you.
And then, so please check out Aziza Holiday or Dahlia Bell on all of their socials and follow them around town. They are amazing. Also, Google them online. You might see a booty hole. You might see her fighting with, you know, Piers Morgan. It'll be great. So.
Or my booty hole fighting with Piers Morgan. You never know.
The internet's a wild place. Oh, gosh. I love it. Perfect. All right. Thanks, Aziza / Dahlia.
Thank you. Love you, mother.
Bye.
Hi, everybody. This has been another episode of A Gem of a Secret Podcast. The host of A Gem of a Secret Podcast is Coco Gem Holiday. Our music was provided by Touche Douche and Party Favors. You can follow them on Instagram at Touche Likes Beef and Party Favors Music. Please follow us online at www.agemofasecretpodcast.com. That is a J-E-M of a secret podcast.com or anywhere you listen to podcasts. Our episodes are released every Thursday. Bye-bye.